Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back or welcome to the Building Efficiency Podcast presented by Nenni & Associates. I'm your host, Jim Schaefer. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, Nenni & Associates is an executive search firm focused on the building efficiency industry, hence why we named the podcast the way that we did. And simply put, we help our clients find the right talent. Each week, we sit down with leaders from the industry to discuss their backgrounds, how they got started in their careers, and where they see the industry heading. We also get to know our guests and find out what drives them to be successful. And on today's episode, episode 109, we sit down with Becky Wacker. This was such a fun and lively conversation. I really appreciated Becky's energy and enthusiasm throughout the discussion. And it was really interesting to hear about Becky's background coming from a family of engineers and how her degree in aerospace engineering was actually more transferable into the building efficiency industry than I would have anticipated. And really the core of our conversation revolved around the progression of her career and current state and future trends of the energy services industry. Becky was obviously prepared, insightful, and clearly passionate about not only winning in business and growing her career, but supporting her team and positioning them for success along the way. Now, if you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our channel and consider downloading this episode and future episodes. This is really the only way that we can track how many people are listening. So if you're still streaming the episodes, I urge you to consider hitting that download button instead. Now, if you enjoy this episode, please share it with your network and recommend to a friend or a colleague. Now, we think you're going to enjoy this conversation with Becky and me, so let's drop in. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Building Efficiency Podcast. Today, we're sitting down with Becky Wacker from Trane. She is the Director of Energy Services Sales for North America. Becky, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah, I think your background, you know, just kind of, you know, where you've been and who you've worked for and who you're currently working for, I think a lot of our audience is probably going to recognize you, recognize your name. But for some of the listeners out there who may not know you as well, bring us up to speed, if you could. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, and you know, how you got started in your career.
All right. Well, I'll avoid the full genealogy report. But
Ancestry.com. Sure.
Yeah, Ancestry.com. We'll get a plug in there for you. I grew up in Maine. I either say a small town in Maine or a suburb of Boston. If you know New England very well, you know both can be true. I might be the nerdiest person by pedigree that you know. Both my parents are engineers, my mom and my dad. I'm the oldest of four. Two of my brothers are engineers. One's working through their engineering degree right now. I have an uncle who's an engineer, and I'm married to an engineer. So the arguments in my house are really, really boring and really interesting, depending on which way you lean with that.
Awesome.
But I'm an aerospace engineer by degree. The rest of them are all electrical engineers, so I had to be a little bit different. I attended the University of Minnesota. I was brought there by my love of hockey and a little bit of talent that I had. And when I graduated, I joined the industry. So as you mentioned, there's a number of companies on my resume that many would have heard of. My first stint was with Johnson Controls. I spent quite some time there with a number of different roles. And currently, as you mentioned, I'm the Director of Energy Services Sales for Trane, responsible for all of North America.
Okay. Well, maybe tell us a little bit about your time at Johnson, because you were there for about 12 years. And it looks like, you know, you kind of followed a career progression, you know, obviously starting off, you know, in kind of the engineering side of things, then moving up into leadership roles. So maybe tell us a little bit more about that. And if there was anything that you learned along the way, I'm sure there was at least one thing you learned.
A couple here and there.
Right.
You know, coming out of my senior year, maybe coming into my senior year, I still didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I had an engineering internship with a building automation company. And it was one of those cool moments in your life where you find something that really excites you. And so in this internship, I would go to work and then I'd go home and think about it. And I'd be thinking about the coding. And I was just really excited to see how a technology could bring a building to life. So from there, you know, I looked at a few companies and I landed with Johnson Controls, selling building automation systems. And I did that for 4 years and I really enjoyed it. And then I was tapped for a really neat role that tied into building outcomes based on technology integration. And so that's really when I stepped away from living in that core product world of what we think of from many of the OEMs, and really looked at more how do we use our buildings to enhance and enable what we do every day within that building, not just a place to keep the snow off of your head. I say as it's snowing here in Minnesota. So from there, I spent some time, working through many different customers with some really neat technology integration projects. And then I had a chance to lead an engineering team. And so my first management role was actually leading a group of engineers as well as the sales strategy for roughly a third of North America, which was a great experience to see what it looks like to not only build a strategy for what we're going to go tell our customers can happen and how that can come to life for them, but then also lead those who are responsible for putting that project together and tying that entire acquisition team all in one place. So from there, I stepped into some more of the software side and some corporate strategy, which was a really, really interesting approach to, again, taking that love for buildings and how we use the buildings and how we bring them to life and tying that to what our building and what our business missions are. And so, no one really owns a building just to have a building. That building is enabling some part of their mission. And so I learned a lot about continuing that progression. And from there, I got a call from Trane with an opportunity to lead a full business. So I had $100 million P&L leading all of Trane's business streams for Minnesota and Western Wisconsin. It's been a wonderful journey with them. And about a year ago, I was offered and accepted the opportunity to lead energy services sales across all of North America for Trane.
All right. So before we get into that, I feel like we got to take one more step backwards and just tell us about the aerospace engineering degree and how that translated into your career and your time here and in kind of the building space.
A fun fact about me is I played women's hockey at the University of Minnesota, where I was lucky enough to win two national championships and pick up a little bit of a Minnesotan accent.
That's awesome.
Yes. And I had a fabulous time doing it. However, I wanted to be a mechanical engineer. And so when I got into my junior year, my classes started to conflict with practice time. And coach and I had a conversation. She said, well, Wack, if you want to keep your full scholarship, you kind of need to show up to class and practice. So it was time to find a major that didn't conflict. So, aerospace was always something I'd been fascinated about as a kid. And it was really, it's an offshoot of mechanical. And so that was where I pivoted to. So I didn't really mean to become an aerospace engineer, but it was really fascinating. I love my classes. I really enjoyed it. And at the end of the day, aerospace engineering is mostly about airflow. You treat air like a liquid, and there's a lot of technology and coding and programming, very much like a lot of the different technologies that go into our buildings. So I got lucky that when I was a junior in college, I picked something that blossomed into the career that I have today with aerospace engineering. It's a bit of a pivot, but it was a wonderful schooling experience for me, talking about asteroids and spaceships. And now I get to talk about building outcomes.
No, that's cool. Yeah. And, at our desk, we look at a lot of resumes and a lot of folks with all sorts of engineering backgrounds are in this space. And I'd say aerospace is probably one of the few. So maybe that opens up some doors for other aerospace engineers out there that want to get into the building efficiency energy services space. That's pretty cool. All right. So just in case somebody's been, living under a rock, or somebody who's new to the industry listening to this podcast, maybe tell us a little bit more about Trane globally, big picture Trane, and then tell us a little bit more about, what falls under your role here at the energy services side of the business.
Yeah, so Trane, many people know us for our HVAC business, but we're part of Trane Technologies, which is a global climate innovator around sustainability. So we have a sister company, which is Thermo King, who designs and sells and manufactures refrigerated transport trucks. And so really, if you think about all of the places that we need heating, cooling, refrigeration, within many of our commercial lives, but also our residential lives, Trane Technology plays a role in that. And so there's a lot of really neat synergies between the two sister companies, and then also many places that they're very different. Within Trane, as the legacy HVAC company that many know of, there's, of course, the slogan, "It's hard to stop a train." That is our residential slogan that many people know of. That's wonderful. I represent the commercial space. And so within the Trane commercial business, we have not only the legacy equipment as well as service. We've got, great building automation control systems. We also have our energy services business, which you can think of, many would associate with being an ESCO. We're one of the 13 accredited ESCOs out in the space. And so that's the world that I live in. I lead about $1 billion sales organization, working with all of our associates to really think about how we can go help our customers and those that use buildings, think of them in a way that's different, that's tied towards sustainability. We've all heard the word decarbonization, some of those other big buzzwords and mega trends. And that's a big piece of what we focus on and what I wake up every morning and think about with my team every day.
Yeah. And even over the last few years, let's just say, since you've been here with Trane, the last 4 years or so, I mean, the ESCO market has changed dramatically, right? It seems like, we go to a lot of the conferences and talk to a lot of folks in the space, and it does seem like, this is no different than any other industry. It's changing, it's evolving. So I guess when you think about your team, you think about the market, you think about the customers that you guys are serving, what are you seeing today versus maybe 4 years ago when you first started in this role?
I would say more and more, the alphabet soup is changing on a regular basis. And some of that is the incentives. We went from ESSER, now we're to IRA, we've got ITC, we've got et cetera, et cetera. And so that's driven some of the changes that we've seen here recently. A big piece of that is now, especially with some of the different incentives brought in with the IRA, as well as different regulations and utility incentives in there, is giving our customers and building owners a different way to think about how they can achieve their environmental goals that they may not have been able to in the past. So there's a lot of ways that you can access money to help bring the first cost of systems down and solutions down in a way that then allows you to get that ongoing life cycle savings and upfront savings, or at least upfront net neutral cost. With that, though, it's not as simple as just doing it on a spreadsheet. And I think the legacy history of many ESCOs is, here's your spreadsheet, here's your payback, here's the ECMs that you can get. What do you think? Now it's our customers have a lot of choices in who they work with and how they go and achieve those different goals and what that looks like in their building. And so we at Trane think it's really important to think about the mission of that building as we're putting those projects together and leveraging those funds to say, now you've got a way to talk to your associates and improve your employee engagement by what you do with your building. Or you've got a way to attract more students to your universities with how you do these projects with your building, or even turn them into a learning lab where your students are learning while you're working on your facilities and bringing some of these sustainability goals to life. So it's been a really fascinating ride to keep up with. And we're seeing the evolution of change happening very rapidly. And so many, many different regulations are coming into place. Utility incentives are changing on a regular basis. And, we're coming into this spring, which is going to be when we close our first tax season with the IRA incentives being in their full swing. So we're going to see a lot happen even just this year on top of the change that we've already seen in the past few.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. And I guess one of the trends that I've been seeing and hearing just over the last couple of years is a lot of the ESCOs that have traditionally been in the public sector market have been looking at developing commercial and industrial efforts, or C&I divisions, to pursue and really diversify, especially as we look at this broader discussion around energy as a service and, the different financing mechanisms that are out there. So I guess, what are your thoughts on that? Is that part of the plan or the strategy for you and your role here?
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah. I have a sales leader on my team who leads our C&I acquisition team in terms of our sales and how we develop the projects. And it is a different space than the public money sector. I mean, yeah. It truly is the way that the industry thinks about it, as well as how even the financial mechanisms can flow. So we have seen certainly a legacy financial solutions, as well as now different innovation coming into that space. So I agree with the marketplace and my competitors that the C&I space is really, really important. The other key spot that we see with that is often we're working with customers that span geography. And so they may not just have one building or a cluster of buildings in one location that has similar incentives, rebates, regulations, et cetera. They're spread out across multiple states, multiple regions within the country, different profiles for different renewable options, grid emissions factors, et cetera. And so it's a very complex space, but also a space where there's big goals that are being made. And so a lot of the executives for these C&I companies are getting pressure and are making commitments to environmental sustainability, you know, through either scope one and two decreases or net zero commitments, et cetera. So working with them to figure out how do you bring that to life and how do you balance all the different options that are available while leveraging and not getting caught by the different incentives and regulations out there.
Yeah, I think that sets us up nicely for kind of like where you see the future of the industry heading. Right. So I know that's kind of where we're at today. That's what's going on. But if you were to look 5, 10, 15 years later on down the road, you can answer this from, you know, any direction that you think, whether it's from legislation, technology. I mean, where do you see the industry heading?
I think there's a couple of key drivers that are going to impact the industry. One is from a utility perspective, and many of those electrical engineers in my sphere, all of them work in the utility industry. As we see the grid emission factors cleaning up and more renewables joining the grid, that's going to change some of the scope one and two conversations that we're having. And so it's going to put more and more pressure on the electrification of heat or minimizing how many of the fossil fuels that we're burning. And so as a company that specializes in HVAC and has had a very long lasting pedigree in that space, really looking at how you turn something like a chiller into a giant heat pump that can now heat buildings and what that means, not only in buildings going forward, but we're seeing a lot of regulations coming in place that are pushing some of these efficiency expectations or goals that are pushing these efficiency expectations into our existing building space. So if we think about a lot of the different HVAC and mechanical systems, as well as others, but HVAC is one that's very impacted by burning fossil fuels. There's a lot of changes in differences in how we were designing with a boiler versus how we're now going to go ahead and design with some of these other systems coming forward. So that electrification of heat is going to be really, really big and a big place that customers start to capitalize on. What we're seeing is right now, many of our customers' asset plans and their sustainability plans are on a collision course with whatever their goal timeline might be. So as they start thinking about replacing different pieces of equipment or different pieces of technology in their space, as those time commitments get shorter, the lifespan or the life cycle of those pieces of equipment are going to start eclipsing into those times where they can't be using them and still meet their goals. So that's going to be a big piece that we're going to look at. Of course, if I didn't say something like AI, I would probably be laughed off of your podcast and you just wouldn't even publish it. That's going to be a big piece, but really it's the machine learning aspect and how we look at our facilities and how we can squeak those extra gains out of it, but also thinking about the utilities, depending on what they're generating with at that time, they may or may not want the customers to be using power at that time. So as they get more and more pressure to hit their audacious goals, we are going to run into a space where there may be connectivity expectations of buildings within the grid to start making smarter choices, much like we've seen demand limiting type solutions in the past. So that's a big piece. And then, you know, the last one being, and you kind of mentioned it, that we see, I expect that regulations and incentives are going to continue to change. So as technology evolves, as goals for different folks and different industries come alive, we're going to see more regulations likely coming in to push our building space to be more sustainable and more incentives and incentives that change to make some of those changes more feasible.
All right. Well, that's super insightful. And I guess this is a note to any future guests that are listening to this. If you're struggling to come up with where you see the industry heading, just talk about AI and you'll be good. that's all you got to do. That was perfect. All right. So let's transition to the last part of the show here. I wanted to ask you the same four questions I ask every guest who comes on, and wanted to lead off with, what are your daily non-negotiables?
I don't know if this fits, Jim. I actually Googled non-negotiables when I saw that, and I found all kinds of lists, and none of them quite fit exactly right for me. But I think for me, coming to a space with kindness, I think, is really important. And that might be a strange thing for a business executive to say. But I think coming into any interaction saying, we're people, let's be people together, and let's go achieve something together. And we're going to have to work through things, and we may not agree, and we may get scratchy at times. But letting kindness be our underlying foundation of the acceptance that we're people, and then also assuming that good intent, I think that's really important. And that's the space that I want to live my life in.
And what advice would you give to your 22-year-old self coming out of University of Minnesota?
A couple pieces is good job, kiddo. You got lucky and here you are. Go make the most of it. But also, you know, the being successful is a balance between being a really good teammate and helping those around you be successful and being someone that they can rely on, and also someone that can go to them to get support. I think that's really, really key, as well as being a strong individual contributor. You have to be successful, and you have to achieve to be a part of it. And then, you know, the other piece is just be present at all times. When you're 22, you've got a great opportunity to absorb so much information. I'm older than 22, and I still give this recommendation to many, which is, if you've got an opportunity to learn something new about the business, learn it, because you never know when that's going to be something that's really, really important, either in your next role or in something when you're talking to a customer or when you're talking to a peer trying to understand why they're motivated.
And speaking of being motivated, what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Well, being a former Division I athlete, I'd probably be lying if I didn't say something about winning. Really like winning. Really hate losing. But aside from that, you're probably picking up on this theme. I'm really motivated by joint success. I love leading a team or being part of a team that has audacious goals and working together to go make it happen. I don't want to set the bar low. I want to set the bar high and go try to do something really special. So I guess if I were to summarize it, I would say in my world, there's nothing better than being a part of a group and winning.
Yeah, well, you indirectly answered one of the most common interview questions, right? There's always like, hey, do you love to win or hate to lose? You get an insight into someone's personality, right? What motivates them, especially in sales interviews?
Yes, the last time I was asked that question, I don't think I let the interviewer stop talking before I just said, I hate losing. And it just like came out of my mouth. It was, but yes, very common question.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. All right, last question here. What do you want your lasting legacy to be?
I want my legacy to be, someone who's a really great teammate, someone who helped others be successful. And so I want my legacy to be when I was there, the team had success, and they had success because they could count on me and because I would do my part. But also I would chip in and I would think about team success over individual success.
Well, Becky, that was a ton of fun. Thanks for your time and thanks for being a guest on the Building Efficiency Podcast.
Thanks, Jim. It was my pleasure and I had a blast. Thanks for having me.
All right. All right, there you have it. Episode 109 with Becky Wacker. I hope everyone enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you did enjoy it, please be sure to subscribe to our channel wherever you enjoy listening to your favorite podcasts. We hope that you're sharing this with your friends and colleagues. And one last thing, if you have any future guests in mind from the industry, please reach out to me. We'd love to hear from you loyal listeners. So until next time, I'm Jim Schaefer, and we'll catch you on the next episode.